This is the Daily Brief Podcast. You can subscribe to the Daily Brief Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Podomatic, and on Spotify. And if you are so inclined, please head over to Apple Podcasts and give us all the stars that helps people to find us. Today, I have the honor and the pleasure of talking with Michael Teicher. He is Executive Vice President of Media Sales for 20th Television. Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paige. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're in LA, right? I thought you were going to be in New York.
No, I am in LA today, and I can't call it sunny LA. It's downpour LA.
I heard it's really raining, and then it's also snowing where you live, right?
Yeah, it feels like I couldn't win, but by the time I get home, the snow will be gone.
Yeah, right. I'm in Denver, and it's like 75 for the only time that I get to brag about my own weather.
Fantastic.
All right, so for starters, why don't you just tell our listeners what you do at 20th?
Sure. My job is to head up this strategy and create the vision for media ad sales for the 20th Television Division at 21st Century Fox. And what that boils down to is we sell the national advertising in all of our distributed shows, nationally distributed shows, whether that includes first-run shows like Wendy Williams, Family Feud, Dish Nation, Divorce Court, Page Six, and off-network shows such as Modern Family, How I Met Your Mother, Family Guy, and all of the other programs that fall under our stable. In addition to that, we are responsible for driving home brand integration opportunities, particularly in our first-run shows, but also with some unique opportunities in our scripted shows.
Right. So just for clarification's sake, so you guys have the shows that are produced by the Fox television stations, which would be like Dish Nation or Top 30. You have the shows that are produced by 20th Television, which would be Divorce Court, I think, right? Unless that went over to Fox.
That is part of the stations as well.
Okay, because all the first one went to the stations. And then the studio, that would be Modern Family and the animated sitcoms and Last Man Standing, shows like that. And then you have Debmar Mercury shows, which is Wendy Williams, Family Feud, correct?
That's correct. And I'll actually add one to the mix because of our joint venture with Endemol Shine North America.
Right. Right.
We also have product from them in the name of Page Six TV.
Because 20th distributes that show, right?
Correct. So since they are a sister division, we distribute and sell the national advertising in Page Six.
Yeah, so it's a little bit complicated. So, all right. So the upfront season is kind of just getting going. What does that mean for you and your team right now?
Well, for us, the way we conduct our business, particularly in the sector that we're in, but the way we choose to do it, is we go client by client, agency by agency. And we do our upfront presentation. So in our case, that means we're visiting all of our agency and client partners individually. So we actually started to do our presentations about 3 weeks ago or so. And this will last right until, let's call it the end of April or the beginning of May. So at the end of the day, we will probably do about 200 individual meetings. And in those meetings, will probably be represented by about 300 brands, and some buyers work on multiple accounts. So you might call us in full Super Bowl prep right now. So we not only present the media and marketing ideas and strategies that we think would fit a brand, it's also time for us to discuss some of our new shows. And we have a few of those coming out this year.
Which are?
So the two new shows that we have, one is courtesy of our partners at Debmar. It's a court show called Caught in Providence.
I came here from Italy with 10 children, and obviously my grandmother. My grandparents were fruit peddlers on Federal Hill, and my father also worked on the pushcart with them as a young man. One night, my grandfather and his fellow fruit peddlers were playing cards, and they got a little rowdy, and my grandfather was arrested and taken to the police station. It was a rather frigid day. My grandmother had three dresses on, and she had the money inside the third dress. When they brought my grandfather up from the cell, he was somewhat disheveled. He had spent the night in a prison cell. My grandmother immediately jumped up and reached into her dress, took out this money, and said, "Please, Judge, please, no jail, no jail." And my father jumped up and started to apologize to the court. And the judge immediately sat him down and says, "Young man, have your mother sit down. and explain to her what I'm going to tell you. And the judge said to my dad, your husband is a good man. He just had a bad night last night. I'm going to send him home to you and your family so that he can continue to support you and your children. Don't be too harsh on him. My father was so impressed by that, that to the day he died, he told a story about this great judge that took care of his father. That had such a profound impact on my dad that it influenced me. That's why when youngsters come to my court, I am particularly sensitive to not ridiculing their parents, not trying to cast aspersions on whatever the incident was, but to try to show that the courts are friendly and that the institutions of government are not there to harm people, but where possible, to help and to have compassion, to have sympathy, and to have understanding. And to this day, I always think of that story, particularly when youngsters come to the court.
And what is frankly very interesting and unique about this show is that it is a locally produced show in Providence, Rhode Island. So one would think that the judge is not somebody who is nationally known. And frankly, he wasn't known to me. However, apparently he is an online or YouTube sensation because I have now been in several meetings with media buyers in their 20s. And when they see the video come up, Caught in Providence, they immediately know who Frank Capri is. And he's an 81-year-old judge. And we're talking about a courtroom with a lot of heart, and we're talking about a courtroom with cases that are just, frankly, quite humorous. We're talking about parking tickets or local town violations, and his method of dispensing judgment is very unique. It can be humorous. He's not a pushover, but he's been known to use kids in some of his judgments. So we really think we might have something special here. I rarely predict whether a show will be successful or not, but there's something about this that I think people are going to fall in love with.
I think it also gives us all hope because you can be 80 and or 81 and still a YouTube sensation.
Yeah, I'd say you're right. So he's got over 900 million views, I guess, since he's been online. So I think it's pretty amazing. The second show, which we are very excited about as well, we have partnered with Discovery, and this is a unique model, one that we hope to build on in the future. We're going to be doing a show under the banner name of True Crime Files. What this is an aggregation of all the programs from Discovery ID that are almost like kryptonite for women in daytime, where it is actual crimes dramatized, recut, and put in a presentation for an hour.
It was love at first sight. They wanted to create that fairy tale life.
He talked in circles. I never got a direct answer.
Scott, do you have anything to say tonight?
No. This is a man who can lie with ease.
He was the most hated man in America.
Investigation Discovery presents Scott Peterson, An American Murder Mystery.
And what we think that is very compelling about this is one might not immediately think that Discovery ID is actually the number one rated cable network in women 25 to 54 season to date. So this is a genre that apparently is very attractive to women during daytime and maybe even prime time. I can also tell you from personal experience, I think my wife uses it and tries to come up with ideas of how to wipe me out on occasion. But and
I hope
she,
that's
you know,
not
so
true.
She's yeah, so she's got a very large library at this point from which to choose. So we think our advertisers are really going to dig this. So this is going to be on in daytime, and it's truly compelling TV. In fact, one of its claims to fame is that viewers who watch this, and we call this metric length of tune, they don't leave the show. They watch 53 minutes of an hour, and that's unheard of these days. So they stay very focused on this. So these two new shows, when added to everything that we're doing already, is pretty exciting.
Do you know if True Crime Files is cleared nationally at this point?
The distribution team that Discovery hired is out in the marketplace now, and it's well on its way to full national distribution.
Okay. Because last time I checked, it was Sinclair had cleared it, which gives it, for right now, what, at least 40%? And then they were still working on it.
Yeah, I'm not sure of every single
really
station
you?
Within the
yeah.
lineup or if all of them have taken it. Mm-hmm. But we think the story is so compelling that we will end up in that full distribution category.
I do think that, I mean, people have tried this, taking cable shows and putting them on in syndication. I would maybe argue that it hasn't worked super well in the past. But that said, I feel like, A, you're right, true crime is popular with this demographic, which dovetails with syndication's demographic. And I think it's content that hasn't been fully exploited. So it's sort of a chance to get another bite of that revenue apple with this content that's already been produced. And then can sort of considering the viewing levels of daytime TV, I think in some cases it makes sense to do it this way.
Yeah, in fact, you know, I think you said I would argue it hasn't worked very well. You wouldn't have to argue with me because it hasn't worked very well. And I think that's largely because the programs that have been distributed in syndication typically have not been consistent with the demographic of the time period that they would be consumed. So you hit the nail right on the head. This is women, 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 women. And I think it's very congruous with the daytime audience. And
the only thing
to
is,
your point,
oh, sorry, go ahead.
And to your point, and based on the evidence of them being number one cable women 25 to 54 year to date, it's pretty clear that this is a genre that women will want to watch.
So my two points here are, one, back in the day, NBC tried to syndicate Real Housewives, which in a way, because of the female demographic, seemed like it made a lot of sense. I think ultimately it was too serialized to work in syndication, so you couldn't just tune in and tune out, which I think you can on a show like True Crime
Correct.
Files. You're in, you watch your 53 minutes and you're out because the story has been told. It doesn't continue the next day. And then, but the other thing is, that the show that didn't work that I thought was a good idea was Crime Watch Daily, which is not, it's not scripted or reality. It's kind of like a news program. But for whatever reason, that show didn't catch on. So I feel like the true crime idea in daytime is still a good idea. It just hasn't, we haven't figured it out yet.
Well, with respect to Crime Watch, and I don't work at that company, so I can't tell you whether I'm right or not, but what I can speculate on is, that was a first-run show that had to be created and assembled every single day. So
yeah.
There was a cost structure associated with it. I don't think the ratings were necessarily that poor at all. So I think the genre works. I think you were looking at a scenario where you're starting from scratch and creating a new show every day.
Yeah.
These programs already exist under the banner of 5 or 7 shows on Discovery. So all they're really doing is editing. So I think you're seeing a very different business model.
Yeah.
So I don't think it was that the audience wasn't appealed to. I believe it was more about the format of the show and how it was derived and the cost associated with it versus what we're going to be doing.
Right, exactly. Just a side question, which is, why do you choose to hold, what did you say, 200 meetings with 300 brands or something? Why do you choose to do it that way instead of, you know, what the networks do, which is just one overall presentation? Although I know they also then go hold meetings.
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of reasons, but the most important reason is based on strategy. I think it's absolutely impossible to hold a meeting, an upfront presentation with hundreds of advertisers in the room and have any form of conversation that can lead
right.
to working with somebody on a customized basis. This way, we get to get under the hood of what the client or agency partner is looking for, what their brand stands for, whom they're trying to target. So I would much rather any day of the week speak on an individual client-by-client basis so we can tailor solutions versus try and create a one-size-all, here's our programming.
Yeah, yeah. And I know upfront still it's a time where brands have to attack in a way because that's when people are doing a fair amount of their buying. But you guys also are in this market year-round more and more, right?
Everybody's in the market year round now.
Right.
If you look back over the history and, you know, my history, I would say there was a point in time, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 years ago, where syndication would sell such an overwhelming amount of their inventory in the upfront that they were barely in the scatter market. But really, if you flash forward to today, we sell a healthy amount, but we always are in the market. Cable, really, I don't think anybody has really gone above 60, 65%. In fact, as I recall, a few years ago when Joey Abruzzese was working, he used to peg it at 50%. And even the networks these days, they're really not, I don't believe, surpassing 80%. So everybody is selling all year round, whether it's their traditional media or marketing opportunities for clients that can be tied through media.
So just for listeners' edification, why don't you just briefly explain what upfronts are versus what scatter is?
Sure. The upfront is the period of time where advertisers are literally looking at their brands and their marketing strategies and deciding in advance of the start of the television season how much of their money they would like to spend upfront to secure the programs and the schedules that they would like that come along with media ratings guarantees and other marketing opportunities. Scatter then represents more on an ad hoc basis, on a quarter by quarter basis, when a client may have incremental funds or a new brand launch where they want to place media dollars a lot closer to air.
Right. So, and then in syndication, would you say that upfront and scatter are much different from each other? Is the pricing pretty much the same because of how steady syndication is, or what kind of differences do you find there?
You know, I think like most businesses, Paige, it's, I don't want to use the word cyclical, but it's based on marketplace conditions. Mm-hmm. But history would suggest that advertisers do buy upfront because they are making, in general, a larger commitment. So they do secure somewhat better pricing. And then in a reasonably healthy scatter market, there are price increases over the upfront. In our particular case, we are really blessed at 20th Television, and we're blessed in a couple of regards as it relates to programming. Number one, we have terrific programming. Put that aside. We have aggregated a number of television shows that reach the almost impossible to reach young millennial audience and the multicultural young audience through shows like Bob's Burgers, Family Guy, How I Met Your Mother, Modern Family, shows that appeal to a younger audience. At the same time, we have a lineup of shows such as Family Feud, Wendy Williams, Page Six TV that appeal to a multicultural audience. So when you look at these two demographics, these are in high demand from advertisers. So we're blessed to have programs that reach them. And as in particular, the young audience, it's no secret, has been fleeing linear television. We still reach them with scale. So in the last 2 years, both upfront and scatter, we've seen unprecedented demand for that inventory. So we've been very fortunate that we have this programming. I'd love more of it, but it's really become a pillar of strength for us.
So we can get into that a little bit more in a little bit, but can we also just talk? So we're talking about upfront now, and can you talk on a macro level about the economic conditions you feel like we're in as you head into this big selling time?
Well, listen, I don't think it's a secret. Over the last few years, and maybe even now in particular, geopolitical unrest is certainly happening. Mm-hmm. And I'll keep this, I'll keep my personal politics out of this. But
we do know that Trump did, you know, say, what did he say today? $50 billion in tariffs on Chinese imports, which is sending the markets a little crazy. So that's just a fact.
Right.
That's not political. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, you certainly do have that. Having said that, by and large, across the economic spectrum, in most categories, profits are up.
Right.
Marketers are selling a lot of product, making a lot of money, and unless the market, you know, does a strict nosedive, which doesn't really seem to be the case, it seems to bounce back the next day after some of these cataclysmic days, I really foresee the macroeconomic conditions as pretty favorable. Because like I said, you know, you're seeing cars being sold, and you're seeing a lot of categories where the business is quite healthy. So I suspect, the marketplace conditions combined with macroeconomic conditions, it provides a level of optimism for me that the upfront should be okay.
Well, plus unemployment is very low and interest rates are still relatively low. So it probably creates a strong consumer marketplace. So let's go back to you were talking about reaching young male demographics with your animated shows. And can you talk a little bit about, I feel like, there was a time where digital was the hot new thing and people were like, all the young people are there. And so we're heading there. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like we've seen a little bit of a boomerang. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Listen, there was a period of time where the broad category of digital was the, shiny new toy. But that shiny new toy has lost a lot of luster. And there's a couple of reasons for that. But if you really look at what's happening in the case of digital, this started about 2 years ago. It was something I called digital deflation, where advertisers who had been previously supporting dozens or hundreds of partners in the digital landscape, they really narrowed that field down to the ones that they felt most comfortable with based on either measurement or the quality of the programming. Take that a step further to where we are today, where brand safety has become of heightened importance because of all the stories you see where brands are aligned with videos that are really untoward and really a bad brand association. So what you're starting to see now is advertisers have really constricted the list of partners. And frankly, even though some of them still have brand safety concerns, as they should, when you look at the landscape, it's Google and Facebook with an incredibly dominant share, but Hulu is doing very well, as they should. The network players are doing very well. By and large, those digital players that look, feel, and smell a lot like television are the ones that are performing best.
Right.
So we have definitely seen an attitude shift in digital. And a lift in perception, again, back to the old days of the effectiveness, safety, measurability of television.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, you can punt this question if you want, but, and again, for listeners' edification, advertising is sold on what's called a CPM basis, which is cost per thousands. How would you say that pricing compares on digital platforms versus, like, if you're selling into Modern Family or Last Man Standing?
Well, I will largely punt, although I will say there's a significant difference between online advertising and television. Mm-hmm. We do have a finite amount of inventory, mm-hmm. and digital is infinite as mm-hmm. long as people keep putting things up. And there's less pressure against digital advertising because, A, the amount of it, and, two, there just never seems to be a sense of timing that matters. Whereas right. we have limited inventory. If you want to be in this show, this live show, this award show, this talk show, you got to get in. It right. doesn't wait around for you like online video might.
Right. So for all those reasons, there's a premium on TV advertising still, in summary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then recently there were a couple interesting announcements. One, NBC announced that they were going to move toward offering what they called a Prime Pod, which I don't have it in front of me, but it was something to the effect of the opening pod, which is the minute or so time of advertising in a show, would be offered exclusively to try to make that sort of more exclusive to that advertiser taking it. It's something that syndication, particularly an off-net syndication, has done for a long time. And then Fox also has said that by 2020, they would like to try to pare down to 2 minutes of advertising per hour by 2020. So I just wanted to know what your take was on those two announcements, since I do feel like those are things that have happened in syndication for a while.
Well, you're exactly right. And I guess my somewhat cynical and snarky reaction would be, it's so nice to be the leader in the media industry and have the networks follow what we're doing. I think it's very gratifying. Listen, I think everybody's in a similar conundrum, and that is, to make the television viewing experience as positive as possible for the consumer.
Right.
So that creates less leakage from television to streaming where there's no commercials. Having said that, I think what you're seeing with NBC and Fox is sort of the opening salvo. I don't think we're talking about in year one a complete metamorphosis or transformation of the model. I think you're going to see some limitations in some of the pod positions, which is good. But I really don't believe that I really don't believe it's going to create a mountain of difference. Now, if the objective is ever achieved at some point, you know, as announced by our own company, to dramatically reduce the number of commercial minutes per hour, then I think you start to look at different models and different ways of trying to measure that so it doesn't become a revenue negative model.
Right.
But as it relates to what we do, listen, even with these changes, our inventory is still much more pristine. Our pods are shorter. But again, as far as I'm concerned, anything that's good for all of television will help everybody. But again, it's nice to know that something we have been doing and something advertisers do find attractive about us has led the way.
Yeah, the one thing, I don't know how much we want to get into this really because it's kind of off track, but the one thing that I don't understand is on the Fox announcement, and I read an article, I think in Ad Age about this, essentially saying how much would an advertisement cost if there's only 2 minutes an hour, so let's say 4 30-second spots. And their guess was something like a spot that previously would have been $300,000 would be like $1.6 million. That's all pretty speculative. But, you know, you just wonder, sure, if you reduce advertising or if you reduce inventory, that reduces supply and increases demand, all of that. But do you just price people out of the market? But that sort of remains to be seen, I think.
Yeah, and it's too early to tell. Listen, Joe Marchese is a really smart guy, and I'm sure he has a plan on how that'll all work. And at the end of the day, it'll require marketplace acceptance. But I'm not equipped to really talk about what he has planned, other than I admire him for taking a very innovative stance.
Also, talking about all that economics almost broke my brain, so we have to move on. I'm always like, the reason I became a journalist is because I cannot do math, but then I became a business journalist and math has been forced upon me. Anyway, all right. You mentioned this before, but I think one of the most interesting parts of advertising and syndication in particular is that opportunity to offer branded integrations. And I think syndication is very often day and date. For Page Six TV is a good example where you're producing each day with new content. So that gives you kind of an opportunity to showcase brands in these topical programs. And then I know you also do it in your off-net sitcoms. So can you just talk about some of the things 20th's got going on in this area?
Yeah, I think branded entertainment and integrating brands into shows, you know, has really become an important part of our business model. And I think it's an area where we do stand uniquely poised as an advantage over many of the other distribution platforms. It's really been baked into the DNA for many, many years in talk shows and other shows like Page Six. And we utilize it as a method for an advertiser to really integrate themselves into a show in an organic way that allows them to do more than just have a simple 30-second spot, whether it's a product demonstration or integrating it into the fabric or theme of a television show. So, for example, if you look at a program like Wendy Williams, where she is talking about a product or service and it's weaved in either an entertaining or informative way, you have it's not being skipped during commercial time. It has the implied endorsement of the host of the show. And it also allows a creative way to send those selling points to the consumer. And all research has shown that if done well in shows like Wendy or Ellen or something along those lines, the viewers actually like it and appreciate it. As far as our off-network stuff, you know, we try to be really creative. And we've been working with our shows like Modern Family and How I Met Your Mother and Family Guy, Last Man Standing, to create what we call exclusive integrated pods. And going back to that 60-second standalone national pod that the networks have decided that they like how we do, that's an opportunity for us to really align a brand with relevant show content based on what their objectives are so they can own the entire pod. So it's really an exclusive pod on steroids that gives an advertiser a unique opportunity to own this, make it look like it's seamless as part of the program, and it becomes really unskippable at that time.
Do you have an example of what did you call it, exclusive integrated pod?
Exclusive integrated pod, sure. Okay. We've done some with Toyota. We've done with TracFone, where in the case of TracFone, it was in Modern Family and it was built around some of the family members actually using their phones for a variety of reasons. So sometimes these are built around a product that is either being used in the show or it's based around a mood, a circumstance, or a theme that they're trying to put forward. And it ties seamlessly back to the show, and it makes it very relevant. The third thing that we're doing, which is really kind of cool in some of our off-net shows as well, is we've partnered with the global leader in digital ad insertion called Myriad. And what this is, they have a very unique proprietary tool. The technology is absolutely seamless to digitally insert either replacing or something that had never been in the show before. A product. It could be a car. It can be a billboard. It could be moving video on the TV in the background. And we work closely with our producers and our advertisers to identify those brands that can be digitally inserted in those shows.
So, and then digitally inserted means like you could put a box of Triscuits on, I'm trying to think of an example, on the counter in Modern Family, or you could, like, what does that look like?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's in its most simplistic form. And what we actually call these, you know, new innovative ad units. So literally, characters from a show can be walking on the street, and we've done this with several films. So Why Him, mm-hmm. for example, which was a Fox film a couple of years ago, we were able to put up banners and posters like on bus shelters and in other areas that either weren't there or they were there and we were able to put these on top of it. So it looks very natural. We can do storefronts. We can create a scenario where somebody's walking by a mini mall and we can make it look like it's a Chipotle. So it's as natural as it looks. The viewer would have no idea that it didn't exist.
So then just tying that back to the exclusive integrated pods. So that would be, let's say, at least a 30-second spot. And then there's also sometimes non-advertising content around that as well, right?
Say that again.
It's advertiser content, but it's not necessarily in the form of an ad in those spots.
Correct.
Okay. Can you
That's
explain
correct.
That? Yeah.
Well, as part of those, their ad is associated with it. So it's this Modern Family moment brought to you by Toyota, then we would show content from Modern Family,
Toyota van
and then it would be followed by the 30-second spot.
Okay, got it. I think the other thing off of brand and integrations for one second, but a point about syndication that I've found interesting lately is one, So cable networks have declined a lot in what's called reach. So they're how much they reach the national audience. It's down to maybe 70%-ish. It used to be much higher, but because of cord cutters and stuff. So, but broadcast TV stations, you know, their reach remains the same. So that provides a better opportunity for advertisers in terms of national advertising. And then the other point I just wanted to make is free over-the-air television is having sort of this resurgence because people are like, oh yeah, I can put an antenna on my roof and get free, you know, 80 channels and add that to my Hulu and I'm out for $10 a month. So I think those two things are sort of interesting trends that are just sort of help syndication story.
Well, without a doubt. And the cable story is actually one that we've seen just surface over the last few years. And it's really shocking when you think about it.
Yeah.
If you had told me 5 or 7 years ago that the cable network business would be on the decline that it's in right now, I would have told you I'm very surprised. So the national coverage right now is actually about 76%. Mm-hmm. But even more stunning, in households where the household led by under 35-year-olds, the penetration of cable networks is now 58%.
Wow.
So when you marry that against what you said, that we have full national distribution because of the stations, our young adult programming, it becomes that much more in demand.
Yeah. And then the other little point I wanted to make is there's also, this gets kind of techie, but the new broadcast standard, which is ATSC 3.0 called Next Gen TV. So people put it, when that comes online, people put that sort of antenna on their house. They also get even more channels and they get, I'm not sure how this works, but they get some internet content. So it just makes that whole model all of a sudden, which seems so old school, like rabbit ears, is all of a sudden much more attractive. So I think it's just an interesting development.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. I could talk to you a lot longer, but I know you have a heart out, so I'm going to let you go. But Michael, thank you so much for your time. I think it was very informative to everyone.
Well, it's my pleasure. And Paige, if you have advertisers out there that are interested in learning more, if you don't mind, I'd like to provide my email address.
Okay.
It's michael.teichert, T as in Tom, E-I-C-H-E-R, at fox.com. And I want to thank you for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
My pleasure. All right, we will talk again soon. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Paige Alpiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provides the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A. Follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack and follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. And you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Podomatic, and now on Spotify. Thanks for listening.